Hello and welcome to the Unsightly American Soccer Podcast for April Fool's Day, the first week in April. Big Champions League week upcoming on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Four quarterfinal matches, and we have our two Champions League experts in the house today to speak on these matters. A lot of Spanish talk, a lot of English talk. Apologies to a German and Italian fans who might want to have discussed Inter Schalke a little bit more. Yeah, sorry, that just didn't happen. What did eventuate was a wide-ranging and very interesting conversation with our two guests, Stephen Myers, who joined us from the Big Island of Hawaii, and Dave Batista, who joined us from Brookline, Massachusetts. Esteban is the basso profundo. Dave is the person with the normal voice. Mine is the highest. My name's Hal Phillips. I'm your host. Let's get to it.
How you play the game, and so I'm making a pitch there for aesthetics, and that'll bring, at one point we'll refer back to that, and Barca.
Let's jump right in here.
Yeah.
And we have a fabulous Champions League roster of games here, including Tottenham, Real. Now, I was talking briefly with Stephen ahead of your call, Dave. What are you reading about this game in the Spanish papers? Do they have any respect, Stephen, for Tottenham?
Well, you know, there's so much going on in Spain right now in the last few days that I haven't read about what would happen on the pitch in Real Madrid-Tottenham. I guess I want to bounce pass or make a square ball back to one of you guys on that.
Everything I've been reading has, all the people at Real are saying all the right things and talking about how they respect them and pointing out their victories, over Inter and Milan. But sort of in ways that they make it clear that they respect Inter and Milan. So they sort of surmise that Tottenham then, therefore, they guess, must be worthy of some kind of respect. The darkest side of me foresees a tremendous dismantling potentially happening, particularly in the first leg.
I don't see that at all. I think Tottenham has played really well on the road. And, you know, Bale and Pinar and Lennon and Modric, if they do nothing else, they make the opposing midfield mark them. They're always running forward, and Tottenham has been not nearly so effective since Bale has been gone because they don't have to worry about anybody on that side running by them. And I don't think that anyone is holding up Real's back four as anything great. Carvalho is old. Pepe's not been well. Steven, has he been hurt?
Yeah, there have been nagging injury as well. He is in contract talks with the club, and so that's, you know, an issue. And let me just chip in that I did see the away game for Tottenham against AC Milan. I think I saw most of that game, and that was a fun game to watch. That was a hell of a victory.
Well, so Dave, are you thinking that Tottenham is not up to this? I mean, that game that Steven saw, when we all saw it too, I think Tottenham was brilliant on the road, especially in the first 15 minutes. They established that they were not going to be trifled with, and then they end up winning the game. They played better there than they did at home.
Well, of course, I mean, it's incumbent upon me as a Spurs fan to not demonstrate hubris in this moment. So I have to see the glass as half empty at this point. But I think the stuff that worries me is that, you know, both Inter and in particular AC Milan really didn't get after them. And you can argue that they couldn't because the midfield for Spurs dominated so much. And they were fantastic in all those games. But what I worry about Real is that, you know, they're a more athletic team. You know, typically they're a more ambitious team. And they kind of remind me of Manchester United, which is a team that Spurs historically have had a miserable time with, even, you know, in recent years. The one glass half full scenario is that if Tottenham can possess the ball and move the ball and be patient enough to take the time to break down the back four for Madrid, I think they'll be able to do it. Maybe not as much as Barcelona did in the first Clásico this year, which I don't know if you guys saw that game, but that was...
No, I missed that. What was the result of that game, Dave?
That was the... Was it 4-0 or something? Or 5-1, or it was...
Oh, I'm taking a piss, brother. That was 5-0. That was Muhammad Ali versus... Okay.
I should have known.
Muhammad Ali versus Archie Moore.
When is the rematch of that game, Steven? It's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's April 7th, I think.
And they have they're playing each other in the King's Cup too, right?
That's right. Just 5 days later or 5 days before. I'm not sure exactly. I should have my dates right, fellas, but I don't. And then, as you know, if there is in the tie for both respective teams, and Madrid beat your boys, beat your team, and Barca are able to do what they ought to be able to do with the Ukrainian leaders, then the soccer world will just have Iberian Armageddon and ecstasy, right? Where there are four Barca Madrid matches inside 4 weeks.
What is the talk in Spain, Stephen, about Shakhtar? I mean, they're very good. I mean, they play like seven Brazilians.
No, they've got a few, and they play them up front, and they have an extremely strong defense, and at the center of the defense, the best player on the best team in the Ukraine, and by far, outstripping Dinamo Kiev, and they haven't lost a home game in 2 years or something like that, is Shishinsky, this big bitch, long-haired center back, who was a revelatory player in Europe a couple of years ago in the Europa League to such at such a high extent that Barca signed him right before the two teams had to play each other in the European Supercopa, the champion of the Europa and the champion of the Champions League. He disappointed in Barcelona, but you know, reputations for players and for managers in these two cities, they blow like the wind. And you know, Shishinsky was a bit vilified because he didn't live up to great expectations. It's as if the public is paying the man himself. We know all about that kind of capriciousness from our own lot as American sports fans. You know, we see how, you know, these are public figures, and you know, there are incredible things happening. You guys see what's happening in the Spanish league right now?
What is happening in the Spanish league?
There's a work stoppage.
Right, yeah, because the government, the TV contract, there's squabbling over the league and the government are fighting over it, right?
Right. You know, I could do probably a B-plus job of sketching this for our vast listening audience, but it's worth talking about, in part because at the moment, on April 2nd and April 3rd, there ain't going to be any league games. I mean, imagine that in one of the major American sports leagues. It just wouldn't happen, huh?
Not in a country that so values its labor force and its union and its union heritage. That would never happen here.
Yeah. We do like to go far adrift, and certainly we've done it. It would be rare for me, but I'll rein us back in just a little bit. Yeah. So really, the context here, fellas, and it's a crucial one, is the plain black and white injustice of that occurs in the Spanish league. And of course, it's really between what it's about is we got the two grandes, the two giants, los gigantes, Real Madrid and Barcelona, and then there are the other 18 teams, or you know, however many that, you know, coming up and going down. Barca and Madrid have the rights. They worked it out through their incredible muscle of the past. They can negotiate their own TV contracts. The other clubs want to, they've started a legal action, and they've called on the government to suspend the league. They want to change the law. They want the government of Spain to intervene and change the law and remove the stipulation that one game a week has to be televised for free in the country. They want that done away with.
So what does that accomplish? If they take that away, how does that stick it to
everything,
Barca,
like England and like Italy? Everything will be pay-per-view. So there will end up being more revenue that has to be divided in a more fair way, they believe. The six largest clubs that are not the two grandes have responded by saying, we're contesting the contestation of the law. We don't want that stoppage. You see, these aren't the modest or the small or the struggling clubs. These are major clubs. Espanyol, the smallest of them, the second club of Barcelona, Villarreal, the yellow submarine, right, that has come on to great success in the last half dozen years in Europe. Zaragoza, Real Zaragoza, you know, I mean, the Kingdom of Aragon as the capital of what once was one of the most powerful regions in the world. Athletic de Bilbao, the pride of the Basques. Sevilla. And one more, Villarreal. Oh, I think I mentioned them. Sorry,
Atletico.
Guys.
Atletico Madrid.
No, it's not Atletico, actually. Interesting, really? Bluto. But, yeah. Anyway, oh, Real Sociedad. Okay, a traditional and a, you know, a real good team that's up in the Basque Country also, I think. And they don't want this work stopped. Anyway, it's a cock-up.
No one's taking Shakhtar seriously, then, back to the actual competition.
Oh, no, they are. Oh, yeah, indeed they are, because Shakhtar...
Because they're good.
Has, and not only that, but they've given Barca... They've played a couple of times in recent years, and they've given Barca a real hard time. And the other thing is, it's the furthest journey that any team has to make, you know, in midweek when they're going to be playing a lot, and while some big league games are happening. You know, it's the longest flight up there to the Ukraine.
Well, for the longest flight to the shortest fight, Dave, what do you think about Chelsea Man U?
Man U. Chelsea's a bit of a wild card this year. You know, can they get it together? You know, will Ancelotti be smart enough to keep Torres off the field? You know, I think those questions remain to be answered. But I think if you held a gun to my head, I would have to say Man U at this point.
What do you think, Bluto?
I just hate Man U. I was just in Asia. The whole bloody continent supports Man U for no other reason than they are, you know, got the strongest marketing arm, and I hate them. So I can't root for them, and I hate Chelsea plenty too. But I'm going to root for them. And I think Dave's right. They're a bit of a wild card. You're not going to say, oh, they'll play poorly. I don't think anyone knows how they'll play. And if they could just figure out a way to put, you know, a strike force on the field that's any good for 90 minutes, I think they'd be a handful for anybody in the world. But, you know, they play Drogba, like, you know, they bring him on after an hour, or they're trying to get Torres, you know, more minutes, but he's just not responding, and it's a puzzle for them. But I sort of like them to win, because I just don't think Man U's very good. I mean, they're look what they play in the center of the field. They're still playing Paul Scholes and Carrick and Anderson. I mean, they're just not that good there. And at some point, that's got to come back and hurt them.
And Fletcher, you know, as much as you may hate him, he's I think he's actually good at his job. You know, he's never lost his way the way Carrick did.
No, I don't hate any of these guys. And in fact, I respect them all. And I'm sort of playing off what you said about Ferguson. He's gotten the most out of this group, you know, more than I think anybody else would. But, I mean, Fletcher and Carrick and Scholes and Giggs, that is like a really sort of ridiculous combination of old and pedestrian.
And pasty.
And pasty. Very, very pasty.
Ryan Giggs has played how many games for that team?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you exactly. He's played a lot.
And was it just a couple of seasons ago? I mean, it's maybe 800 or 900 or more, right? I mean, he's in his 18th or 19th season. Wasn't it just a couple of years ago that he was the player of the year in the Premier League?
Yeah, he was. And that was maybe a little bit of a lifetime achievement award, but he had a very, very good year regardless that year. You're right. And he's still very effective.
Now, but Carrick has taken a step back, right? He had shown some great promise to be a real visionary midfielder.
Well, part of his problem is, yes, I think that's true, but I think he's a complimentary player, and he's not nearly the defensive midfielder he would be if he was playing in front of Vidic and Ferdinand, but he never gets a chance to do that. Ferdinand's been out for weeks. Vidic has been injured of late, although I think he'll be back for the Champions League ties. So, I mean, you know, that's a tough act for any defensive midfielder to play in front of Wes Brown and Johnny Evans.
I mean, what did you guys think of the Torres purchase or the Torres sale?
But I think, to me, something that's really interesting about Torres, about Rooney, and even potentially now, unfortunately, about Bale, since he's kind of coming off an injury and still not back, is that if you lose 2%, you know, off your pace, if you lose 2% off your intensity, that makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, it's become such an athletic game. It's become such an intense game that you see a Rooney go from being one of the best players in the world to a guy who really doesn't look like he can scare anybody almost overnight. And I really think that there's such, particularly the guys who play up front, are such finely tuned machines at this point that, you know, if they lose anything, their decrease in performance becomes enormous. And you know, I see Torres and his little gut being an example of that. You know, he's put on a couple of pounds, and suddenly he's not the player that he was anymore at all. He's doing the same things that he always did. He's just not doing them quite as quickly or as brilliantly. I mean, people can close him down where they didn't used to be able to close him down. And, you know, he'll still make a really nice, you know, he'll bring the ball down in an amazing way. He'll lay off the ball in a beautiful way. But, you know, before, if you were even with him as a defender, he was gone. He was by you, period. Now that's just not the case.
But the other thing is, you know, why did he go to Chelsea? I don't think that if Liverpool hadn't been in such disarray, they would have sold him. But I think that they recognized, first of all, they had to do something. And they got a great deal. I mean, I think that Liverpool made out like bandits in that deal.
Absolutely. It's an extremely inflated price.
Totally inflated. And opportunistic sale.
And I got some more things to say about football.
Well, you're going to have to say it to Dave and tape it yourself, because I got to take my kid to swimming for the very last time this winter. Which is
the cause
of some celebration, man. We've been fucking driving this kid to swimming practice for 4 months, and it's finally coming to an end. Ay, ay, ay. Later, guys.
All right, see you guys.